dumb and the naked and the drunk dumb. Yes, so sublime. Now they don't want this night to end. The rich can't stand the light. Yeah, the hiding and the lying, and they run from inside. Yes, I'm praying to some other God. He is handsome and forceful with powerful love. He is bringing the global peace and keeping it safe so they can continue to.
That was Poker Face and Thief in the Night, and I never appreciated, I mean, I appreciate their music, but I really appreciated it when I started hearing it with the earphones on. They really do some nice technical work in it. This is Truth Quest and KHEN 106.9 Salida, and it's 35 degrees outside, and tonight I've got a great guest, kind of keeping with the veterans theme like we had last week. We had Denise Nichols, nurse with the that has been taking on the VA for the Gulf War veterans. And tonight I've got Edwin Crosby III, and he's from Albion, New York. And through some of his own experiences, he found out that there's some number codes that the vets may carry with them when they're discharged for the rest of their life that may affect their hireability and another number of other aspects in their life. Are you there, Edwin?
Yes, I am. Okay,
there we go. So I'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself and tell you about how you got into the work that you're doing with the vets here.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Many years ago, beginning in 1956, the Department of Defense ordered the military to begin placing a secret coded number on the discharge paper of every veteran. This document is known to every veteran as a DD 214. It's one piece of paper. And when you get out of the military, you are given this document and told, oh, go register it at the courthouse and don't ever lose it. It's the most important document. But on that document, though it might say honorable, and you served your country honorable, is this secret coded number, when you decipher it, can say homosexual, bedwetter, lewd acts, sexual deviant, paranoid, schizoid, character and behavior disorders, repeated VD, pregnancy, on and on these things go, and they were placed on this document without any notice whatsoever to the veteran. Well, I did my time in the military and spent 2 years over in Vietnam, and when I got out of the military, the first thing I did was to go where my skills in the military would have taken me, and that was to the Federal Aviation Administration to take a FAA-licensed exam to get a license to work on aircraft. And that is a very lucrative paying job. As a matter of fact, I've lost more than $2 million in wages because of this coded number given to me. But this was approximately 1972, and then eventually in 1973, I moved to upstate New York hoping I could get a job up here where I had been stationed in the military previously. And I did. I got hired and et cetera. And then what happened was when it came time to hire me as a permanent employee, they passed me over and hired number 9, number 11, and number 14, as I recall. Well, the rules for the United States Civil Service Commission say you will hire from the top three, and my name was number 1 on the list. And I would like to think that the American people are hiring and know that their public servants are the best they can get, not a bunch of people who aren't even qualified to be in that position. So what happened as a result of that, in 1974, I filed a equal opportunity complaint because that's all I had to go on at that particular time. And I based my complaint on religion because I'm a white gentleman, and there isn't too many things under race, creed, color, sex, and whatever in religion that you can file under. So I had to file for religious basis, but what happened as a result of that, we had a hearing, and witnesses were called in, and when we were done with it, we knew something was wrong. And about a year later, they sent their decision, and they said, based on religion, you didn't win. But my attorney said, in the meantime, we knew something was wrong. So I was sitting there thinking, and I remember back in March 23rd, 1974, on CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite, and him saying, today, the Department of Defense told Congress that they would stop putting a secret coded number known as a spin code on the discharge papers of veterans. The Department of Defense said only those with dishonorable discharges and bad conduct discharges had these codes. Well, like most people, since it didn't apply to me, I said, well, I got an honorable discharge. That doesn't apply to me. I sort of didn't pay any attention except to note that in my mind. And then later on, when we filed our complaint in federal court in March of 1976, my attorney said, we need to go back through your employment history and see if you ever lost a job or you had any other kind of a problem. And I'll never forget the day. It was February 2nd, 1976, Groundhog Day. There was a major league blizzard going on outside in Oneida County, New York, in the Tug Hill area. And it was I called up the American Friends Society, which are Quaker people in Syracuse, New York. And I said, do you know anything about these code numbers? Oh, yes, we have a list of them right here. Let me go get them, and I'll help you out. And of course, she told me where to find it on my form. I could see it, and she told me what it said. And I go, well, that's not me. Something's not right here. What's going on? So I immediately called my attorney and told him that I just found out that I did have one of these code numbers and it's not good. So we amended our complaint in March of 1976, just 30 days later. And what's important about these dates is had it went till June of 1976, there was a five-year statute of limitations that and from the day you get out of the military that you have precisely 5 years to correct any errors or injustices.
I thought that
we were lucky to get in underneath the time.
Do you think there's many vets that know that there's a time limit on that?
Well, no, I don't. And the other thing, for your listeners, especially if there's veterans listening or somebody, a member of a family, this statute of limitations, don't let it bother you or say, oh, boy, I'll never be able to do anything. It's easy to say to a judge or somebody else, or your lawyer could, judge, my client just found out last week. For 30 years, my client hasn't known about this, but now he discovered it. So the time should actually start from when you discover you have this coded number, and then the 5 years can run off. But as we filed this lawsuit, and it went through the courts from 1976 to 1980, we gathered up a lot of evidence. I went to Washington, D.C., made trips, and walked around all over the place and gathered this material up, all kinds of evidence. And if your listeners would go to my website, which is www.veterancourtcodes.com. Don't skip any spaces between those three words, Veteran Court Codes. You'll see all these documents up, plaintiff's exhibits marked by the federal court proving that this does exist. And one document, plaintiff's exhibit 19A, that document shows how many veterans have these code numbers. And in 1979, is the date of the document, it says that the number of such individuals as of 1977 approaches 20 million. So here we have 20 million, now all 26 million, veterans of the United States branded with a number. Now, when I look in my American history book, I see that the only place this ever took place in history was in a place called Nazi Germany, where they branded people with numbers to get rid of them. And that's exactly what has taken place here with these coded numbers. By branding a veteran with this number, they have deprived that veteran of a job, life insurance, bank loans, benefits as a veteran at state and federal level. And what is most important as we get on in this conversation and break it down a little bit, that billions of dollars are being stolen out of the Veterans Administration via these secret code numbers.
Are there any positive codes attaching?
There are some of those. One might say expiration of term of service, left military to enter college, transferred over for some schooling or whatever in the civilian sector. There are some, but there are so many of these bad codes, and your rank, your skin color, and your sex have nothing to do with it.
You have a pretty much
spotless record, but you still ended up getting stabbed in the back with one of these code numbers. Because at that particular time in history, let's say the mid-60s into the 70s, there was a lot going on in this country, as everybody is aware, and a lot of illegal stuff, and it just ended up being that during that time, the Vietnam era, there was so many people entering and leaving the military. 1969, 70, and 71, a million a year entered and left the military during those 3 years, the most ever in the nation's history.
There looks like there's close to about 1,000 or somewhere in that vicinity, because there's some of these codes have letters after them, so I can't tell. I didn't sit there and count every one of them, but
right. And the thing is too, is they when they in 1974 told Congress, we will stop the SPN system. That separation program number, that we will stop it. 2 months or three before that, there is a Department of Defense directive. As a matter of fact, it's at my website marked as a plaintiff's exhibit, that they are changing the name from separation program number, SPN, to separation program designator, SPD. So what they essentially did is just stand there and lie to Congress, and they just kept right on going and never changed the numbers. But what they also did was, instead of giving you an example of what might appear on a veteran's discharge paper, might look like SPN-123. But then they changed it so it would look like SPDXYZ. And the reason they did that, they were trying to prevent employers and everybody else who have these secret code numbers from finding out what the veteran's code was. And it didn't work, didn't do any good.
So the current vets have that same kind of number then carried out through their work career then?
Oh, yeah. Okay. And the reason these... new ones are getting them is, well, if they're going to keep stealing all this money, they have to have new bodies to steal from, because the people from back during the Vietnam era, a lot of these folks have died. Your readers might not understand this, maybe the older ones will, but when these bean counters sit down and figure out how much a war is going to cost, just like they did with this Gulf War, they allow for so many killed in action, so many wounded, and how much it's going to cost them. So they put all these numbers down, and what surprised them about this Gulf War here was the number of veterans coming back with very serious wounds, and they didn't expect well over 30,000 to be wounded really bad. So now you have these veterans are getting a coded number as well. They would have anyway, but now they're able to just really say, well, boy, at this point, we might as well just give a lot of these code numbers out, and we'll be able to steal more money because they were running low, I assume, from the just attrition of people dying.
From what I understand, there's a lot more disabled and injured vets from this war in proportion to those of the Vietnam era, if I understand it correctly. Is that right?
I've seen some figures that are showing that the veterans who were wounded over in Vietnam, of course, now they're able to even save a lot of people they normally wouldn't have been able to save with these new techniques and different things like that. So now you, in effect, the body count isn't as high because they've been saving these people, but the end result, due to the, you know, the damage and whatever, it's not very good.
So when you found out that you had the this number, what? Go ahead and go on with your story of how that affected you and what you did about it.
Well, once we amended our complaint to show that because of this coded number that I had lost this job because there was no other reason not to. I mean, the rules say you will pick from the top three people. Those are the ones with the highest score, and they didn't do it. We amended that complaint to say that due to this coded number, that's why I wasn't hired. And then we had to go back through my history to show that, well, did I go anyplace and apply for some kind of job, and that got used against me. Well, lo and behold, we didn't have to look very far because we just looked at the when I got out, and it was the Federal Aviation Administration, and sure enough, we were able to discover as more and more documents came in that the Federal Aviation Administration was given a list of the code numbers, and that's how they were told to hire veterans. So we now were able to start to gather up this particular evidence that we needed to prove they existed, and I made trips to Washington, D.C., and walked all over and visited congressmen and senators' offices who worked on this matter and thought that they had done a good enough job to stop it, but obviously they didn't. Some of these people in the past from the 70s were Congressman Koch, Congressman Aspen, Congressman Seiberling. There were a few other ones. Then there was Senator McGovern, I believe even Senator Goldwater and a couple other of the senators entered things into the congressional records about this matter. So I would visit their offices and dig up what they had found, and each one of them had sort of a piece of the puzzle. So as we began to put this together, we finally had enough evidence to proceed in court, and when we got there, it was September 78, and there was 2 days of testimony taken, and we had all these documents that you go to my website, the plaintiff's exhibits. As you can see, the court seals are right on them, that we were able to get these documents introduced into evidence, and then the government called a witness by the name of June Hughes out of Texas. And this is the person who dreamed up all these code numbers. And from the witness stand, as my attorney questioned her, he said, according to the regulations, a veteran was never to be told about this coded number. Therefore, how could the veteran ask questions about it and challenge what it said if it was a false and stigmatizing code number? And all she would say was, well, they could have asked. And my attorney said, but if they didn't know it, how can they ask? Well, they could have asked. And it just was like some sick merry-go-round. And finally, we sort of trapped her into something to say, well, aren't veterans entitled to due process of law like everybody else? Yes or no? Well, yes, I guess they are, was her reply. So then we were able to pick a little bit at her testimony. But what the important thing was that we got out of this trial was the fact that we were able to get all these documents in before the court and get some testimony in. But what the judge did was bifurcate my trial. And that means he divided it into two parts. First, they wanted to decide if I could proceed underneath of a section of law known as 28 U.S.C. 1331, which is everybody refers to as a Bivens lawsuit. And then if we could proceed past the question of immunity, then we would then be allowed to proceed to the question of damages, in which at that point we would have been able to call all the witnesses we had, including people from insurance companies who ran checks on my name and came back with a computer printout with my secret code number right on there circled, and I was told that they wouldn't give me life insurance because of that code number. So we had all these witnesses and everybody ready to go, but the judge just made a rather funny decision, and that decision was, well, issued a federal court order, and the United States attorney told me that they corrected your records, that that secret number will never show up again. And my attorneys said, objection, judge, the dam's burst. These code numbers have been disseminated. They can't correct anything. And Mr. Crosby, in all intent and purposes, is a dead man. And so the judge said, well, you're going to have to prove that. I issued an order, and the government's lawyer has testified here that they corrected your records. Well, we knew they couldn't do that. So another year went by, and we were at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York City, and all they did is reaffirm the lower court's opinion is there's no subject matter jurisdiction because we ordered them to correct your records, and they did. But in reality, they couldn't and didn't. So the case ends up at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court denies certiorari, but that doesn't mean the case is over. It means you're going to have to now prove that they lied in court. So wouldn't you know it, I opened a claim with the Veterans Administration because the United States attorney told me to, with my attorney standing right there, and I would be taken care of. And that was January of 1981, and in March, the Veterans Administration sends a letter back, claim denied, can't find your records for 66, 67, 68, and 69. So there we have fraud upon the court. The government attorney lied. And then comes 1983, and that year, I was working as a temporary employee at a local hospital for Alston's Temporary Services as a hospital admissions clerk because I have typing skills. And I didn't miss any work, and they said, well, why don't you go take a civil service exam, New York State civil service exam, and we'll hire you. So I went down to 677 South Salina Street, Syracuse, New York, to take this exam. And I went in and sat down in a room I was directed over, and there were three or four other people there to take a test, not necessarily for the same job, but to take this test. And then the man came in and handed everybody a pencil and paper for scratch paper, put the same on my desk and left, and then came back in with a test and handed them all a test and then picked up my scratch paper and pencil and walked out and never gave me the test. And I thought, what's going on here? So I went out and demanded to know, after quite a few minutes of haggling, why I wasn't permitted to even take a test. And he took my Social Security number, punched it in a computer. Up came my military records, which they're not supposed to have. And he pointed to the same secret code number that the government's lawyer, that U.S. attorney, stood in court and said, oh, judge, it'll never show up again. We've corrected everything. And sure enough, there it was. So I went to visit my mentor, who was the chief judge of Syracuse, New York, Joseph Falco, who's now deceased, and told him what happened. And he said, Edwin, you take all this info, put it down in a complaint, and send it over to the foreman of the federal grand jury, certified mail. But don't send a green return receipt card. And he said, that's a trick. So you people can get to get a letter or get something to a foreman of a grand jury and get it past the U.S. attorney is to send a certified mail with no green return receipt, because technically the foreman must sign for it. But since he's signing a postal thing, it doesn't take away from the secrecy of the grand jury. It won't violate that particular ethic. So in April of 1983, I appear before the grand jury, and a part of what I typed up was charging the governor of New York, then Mario Cuomo, with crimes against humanity and systematically eliminating the veterans of the state of New York. And when the members of the grand jury saw all these documents and heard all this, they weren't very happy. And I believe that day there were 19 or 20, which did constitute a quorum, And after I got done testifying, I stood outside the door and put my ear to the door and listened. And they took their vote, and the governor of New York should have been arrested and tried for crimes against humanity and systematically eliminating the veterans from the state of New York, but nothing happened.
Did you have much support from the other veterans that were experiencing the same thing that you were going through?
Well, in my travels around, it's sometimes difficult to find veterans, no matter which state or where I've been, that will want to stand up and do something. Now, there are some that do, but there are plenty who don't. And the American Legion and the VFW, in my opinion, should have their charters revoked by Congress and everything they own sold at auction and that money deposited in the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Benefits Administration kitty to take care of veterans, because the American Legion and VFW are not a veterans service organization. And I was a service officer with the American Legion, and they fired me because I was actually getting veterans their benefits. And I actually made them have a hearing and come from Albany, New York, all red-faced and looking at their shoe tops. Oh, well, we're real sorry about this. They can't fire you and whatever. And it just really turned me off that here's people shooting their mouth off about being a veteran of the United States of America, but they don't give a hoot. They're just it's some kind of party club, and it just really I just said that's enough for me. I turned and walked away. But there are veterans around the country who are gathering data, gathering evidence, and doing different things, so we will be able to take these people, these traitors who have done this, and make sure that they get hanged or shot in front of a firing squad, because that's what this is going to come to.
Maybe you need to go in a little bit on the straw man thing, then, if you're going to get to getting into that rhetoric, so kind of people might understand where you're coming from.
And what was that?
When you were talking about the part where you have the straw man, those that are receiving the benefits where the veteran isn't?
Oh, yeah, the sort of a ghost.
Right.
I believe that if you look back, when these code numbers were started, as I said, June of 1956, Nixon was vice president, and he was supposed to win the 1960 election and didn't. But then when he finally did get in there in the late, was it 1969, January of 69, he took the oath and got in there. That's when these code numbers, it seemed like everybody, even the Medal of Honor winner, got stabbed in the back with one of these, and all this money started to disappear. Now, what I didn't mention before to your listeners, when we were looking back through my history, employment history, to see if I had lost a job, the first job I had was working underneath of something called the Emergency Employment Act of 1971. And this came out in late 1971. It had $880 million to put veterans to work, Vietnam veterans to work, at the county level. Now, originally, I'm from Delaware County, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia Airport is located in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. It's the oldest Republican stronghold in the country. The second oldest is Oneida County, New York. Now, I worked underneath that program for about 4 or 5 months, but then we were all told there's no money left. But years later, when I went to Washington and dug up all the documents for that program, and we laid them out on the table and looked at them and lined them all up by month to month and whatever, the month that we were all told there was no money left, nobody left the program, nor the next month, nor the next month, nor the next month. Then it showed one leaving, two entering, two leaving, one entering. So what they did from that program and from that particular thing is they took got rid of all the veterans, took all that money that was supposed to put them to work, and that went into what I figure was all this money going into the committee to reelect the president. And lo and behold, the listeners out there getting a very good education here, these secret code numbers were discovered by United States Senator Sam Irwin of the Watergate Committee. And they discovered these when they started to investigate where the Republican Party was getting all these millions, tens of millions of dollars in cash from that nobody knew where it was coming from. So as the years go by, and I say in, Watergate was 73, 74, and rather than face a congressional investigation, the Department of Defense said, oh, we'll stop the SPN code system. But they had already changed the name to SPD, and we're going to keep on with it anyway. But in order to keep an investigation from going any further, they sort of stopped it right there in its tracks. But that didn't stop me and other people from looking into this matter. And lo and behold, over the years, we've been able to gather up a lot of evidence. In one particular case in, I believe it's Danville, Illinois, I at this time would just prefer to say in the state of Illinois, there were some veterans at a VA hospital. And there were, I guess, six or seven of them on a ward or whatever, and the nurse came in with a cart, I guess with water and different things. She said, how you doing, boys? I've got your checks here. And they kind of all looked at each other and like, well, what the heck are they talking about? Is it for you or for me or whatever? And finally somebody said, what do you mean checks? Oh, I have all your disability checks here. It's the first of the month. And they go, what are you talking about? And she started handing them out, and they looked, and sure enough, United States Treasury, and there was their name on these checks. And they go, but our claims are pending. We've never been paid ever. So they called up the police, and the police came to the hospital, and they just started to look around or dig up. And in the Big Wheels office of the hospital, they found a big box just literally stuffed full of checks, which meant there were millions of dollars in that box. So here these guys were awaiting to be paid, but yet here were checks being issued to them that they never saw ever. So now as we start to point out and get into this discussion about how could you take a secret code number and manage to steal money, well, here's how it's done. When a veteran gets out of the military, the Department of Defense assigns them a VA claim number. Now, every veteran out there listening, or maybe family members, know what I'm talking about, that when a veteran goes to the hospital or someplace, they're asked to give a VA claim number, which is separate from Social Security, your old military number. And this VA claim number is what the bean counters, when they figured out the cost of the war, and they issued these numbers, well, I guess we're going to have 30,000 wounded, so let's make up a bunch of numbers and just put them in order here, and we'll issue them to the combat veterans and things, because they're the ones who would most likely apply to get benefits. So we all have these VA claim numbers. Well, what they decided to do was, is they take a VA claim number. When a veteran opens a claim, when the real live human being veteran shows up and fills out paperwork and asks for a benefit, now that he's entered the system, now they can take that veteran's VA claim number and give it a phony name and award benefits to the phony, and then send the real live veteran letter after letter, month after month, year after year, claim denied, don't have the evidence, you claim denied. And then you wait years to get to the Board of Veterans Appeals, and then more years to get to the court, and a lot of veterans were dying before they ever even got a decision made. But that's how this money is being ripped off. And it's not very hard. Of course, anybody out there with some computer skills can tell you, well, wow, that's pretty easy and to do by the way he's describing, because they never really get to see the real live veteran. It's all done with computers now. So if they have that original VA claim number, which is legitimate, but they just give it a different name than the financial computer system of the Veterans Administration, which is located in Austin, Texas. Remember I said about that lady named June Hughes, who was from Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we have a real good understanding that we did is if this all started somehow out of Texas, and the financial computer system for the VA is in Austin, Texas, then what's going on here? So over the years, we've constantly dug up data and information, and I know some of your listeners out there might say, well, hey, this guy's the only one complaining. I never heard of this. Well, before I get into that, I'm opening up at my computer site under miscellaneous pertinent documents, two lawyers, Joseph Colts and David Miracini from Wisconsin, sent a letter, which is here at my website, to United States Federal Judge Barbara Crabb. And it says in this particular letter, we understand that such allegations are extremely serious. That is why, as officers of the court, we are bringing them to your attention. We have considered going to the U.S. attorneys, but feel at this time that a conflict of interest exists within their office. And what they were saying up here in the paragraph is above is that employees of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs have committed numerous criminal acts in Wisconsin, and that they included fraud, forgery, destruction of documents, falsification of and tampering with evidence, perjury, conspiracy to conceal the above said acts after the fact. And this letter, they asked this judge to appoint a special grand jury to investigate massive fraud being conducted against veterans. So you see, it's not only me. Here's two lawyers who have uncovered this in a different location in the United States, trying to get the judicial system to do something, but the judicial system is failing.
So
Major League.
So you've been fighting with this since you got out of the service then?
Well, not so much since I got out, but I would say since 1975 when I got the Equal Employment Opportunity decision. And I go, you know, this stinks. I mean, they said the reason I didn't win is I didn't stand up on a soapbox in the middle of a hangar floor and say, attention, everybody, I'm a Christian, and these are my beliefs, and blah, blah, et cetera, and I believe in one nation under God, and that's why I didn't win. You really have to think about that. What's every person in America, every day they go to work, supposed to stand up in the middle office and tell everybody about their life just so they're covered if something happens. So it's kind of ridiculous. And
so you've been fighting, dealing with this, though, over 30 years.
Yes, over 30 years. And lo and behold, the Lord works in mysterious ways. We discovered, this was just a few weeks ago, that the VA's VISTA, V-I-S-T-A, VISTA computer system had a software program hidden in it that said or allowed the big wheel at the hospital or the chief surgeon, but only selected individuals, could get into a veteran's records and destroy, remove, delete, or alter the evidence in the Veterans Compensation Pension Exam. And underneath the miscellaneous pertinent documents, we have that particular thing listed up here is this VA patient flags, and the other one, I think, might be underneath of the VA caught red-handed, but the VA Inspector General had to literally go to something like 25 to 30 VA hospitals and stand there and watch them remove that software from that particular program. So you have all these things that a lot of folks just aren't aware of that are going on at the Veterans Administration to deny a veteran benefits and also to steal that money. Because every year Congress appropriates probably $40-50 billion or more for the VA. It has to be spent. It just can't keep piling up and piling up. You know, and I'm sure your readers, or maybe you're even aware, I think there's 600,000 case backlog right now with the Veterans Administration.
My goodness.
And I'm one of these people that waited 20 years to get paid, nearly died waiting. And so it's not good.
So you had an illness you developed later, is that what you're saying? Or
well, I was a diabetic and nobody told me. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be extremely lucky and walked into the emergency room at the VA hospital in Roseburg, Oregon, and told them what was wrong, and they quickly took a blood test, and the next thing I know, they're dashing at me with a wheelchair, and I'm wheeled up to the intensive care ward, and I'm told I have a blood sugar level of 801.
Wow.
And that's dead or in a coma. And I was told by the American Diabetes Association that I'm one in 5,000, that I'm that one person out of 5,000 who will walk into the emergency room at the last second and be saved, where everybody else would be dead or in a coma. So, and they nearly killed me. I've actually filed a malpractice tort against them, and that's pending. It's in front of a federal judge now. So it took that particular act of me nearly dying, them killing me, in order to get paid finally.
So how did you support yourself when you were, I mean, were you able to find work while you were dealing with all this VA problems?
From 1993 up until 2004, when they finally give me the 100% service-connected disability, they gave me a pension check. That started out at about $500, $600, and every year you get a so-called cost-of-living increase, which isn't really anything. But that's how I existed from during the 1990s and early 2000s, was this pension check. And before that, in the 1980s, from 1983 or 4, I was collecting public assistance and food stamps. And I thought to myself, I'm not going to let these people beat me, and I'm not going to commit crimes and whatever, but I'm going to survive. And during that time period, I had more than 40 fair hearings that cost the taxpayers of the state of New York over $50,000, and they never won. I won every case because I would say, look, all you have to do is tell the governor to pick up the phone and call the VA and tell them to pay us veterans. I mean, what's going on here? My claim's in. I should be paid, but I'm not being paid. And the doctor said I'm 100% disabled. I mean, I had this surgery, and I'm pretty messed up. I can't do this, so what seems to be the problem? But nobody would say anything. And I, you know, the best way I would describe my position is I'm a witness. And all these years I've listened and I've learned and I've watched of what's going on, and I go, wow, this is just unbelievable. This isn't even my country, it seems like. The Constitution of the United States in Article 3, Section 1, doesn't say lawyer or attorney or bar association. And matter of fact, the framers of the Constitution didn't want lawyers sitting behind the bench. And I go, well, why do we have a secret society and these black robe lawyers sitting back there behind the bench where they don't belong? And if I'm sure some people out there who are older and can understand what I'm saying, if you want to put your finger on one thing that's wrong with America, it's the judicial system, because there is no liberty and no justice right now. And when you have that, there's your mix, and there's what you need in order to have something happen. And when I say something happen, I'm talking about people end up just saying, that's it, I've had enough, and you end up with some kind of a revolution or whatever. But in this country, there's far too many people who believe in that Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and they're not going to tolerate what's going on much longer. It's like this rubber band is just wound up so tight, and these people in Washington, D.C. just think that they can get away with it forever, and they're not going to.
Well, it's kind of
can you imagine that? I mean, I'm actually a victim of Holocaust, too, and so are all these other veterans, and the ones that have died, their widows and children should have a right to know, well, your father was stabbed in the back by one of these secret numbers. That's why he couldn't hold a job, or why all he could ever do was get something minimum wage or work seasonal work or something, or he just was homeless. So many of these veterans are homeless or incarcerated. They were, and it's through no fault of their own.
So you were saying that it costs the state, you know, the country $50,000 to, but that sounds pretty cheap. I mean, for all the different proceedings that you went through, so you had to represent yourself a lot, correct? Or
yes, but there were times when I had to have, and was smart enough, I would go to the legal services and get an attorney and tell them, I'm going to need your help. This time, because I had no access to law libraries, and I was too poor. I mean, the only way I could get around, there was no bus service or anything like that, was I stood along the road with a piece of cardboard and would write the name on my destination and have another piece of cardboard to return home with. So that's the only way I could get around. But I never let it bother me. I just figured, I'm an old soldier. I'll just keep marching on ahead here, and as long as I had a typewriter and some envelopes and a stamps, I figured I was in. And there were a couple times during the 1980s that I saved up my money, and I actually rode the train, which was rather cheap, down to Washington, D.C., and stayed in guest houses for $25 a night and just walked all over Washington and gathered up evidence, and then hitchhiked from Washington, D.C. back to Syracuse, New York. Even in the middle of winter, it didn't bother me, but I just knew that if I stayed with this, that a lot of people were depending on me because I'm the one with all the evidence. And it was so hard for me. I mean, certainly they weren't going to let me have any money. That's why my claim kept getting denied, even though I should have been paid, because if I had the money, I would have been able to travel like I did to Chicago and have that show taped, Veterans Forum. And, of course, that's been on Google, and it's all over the Internet, and a lot of people are now watching that in its full entirety, the 90 minutes, and getting a good education of, wow, we didn't know that was going on. And I understand that. I understand the American people didn't know about this because these news media people are owned by big corporations. And plaintiff's exhibit number 19 is the infamous corporation questionnaire in which these big corporations were asked, do you have list to interpret these discharge code numbers, and they responded, yes, we have such list. So that's how these big corporation owns hundreds of companies, subsidiaries. So that's how a veteran trying to go anywhere to get a job is going to, even if it's a small community, the company or the business that's there might be owned by a conglomerate, and they're going to have all these different problems of trying to get employment.
So you're saying...
I just had yesterday a Marine sent me a letter that found out that he had a code number that says unsuitability, character, and behavior disorders, and he's really mad because he said, there's nothing in my records that says that I have mental problems or anything like that. And he said, now I understand why I can never get a job. But veterans fall through the cracks. They're able to get a job locally or work some summer jobs, paint a house. That's how I was able to get by sometimes and get money, was to paint some people's houses. I would go up and actually ask senior citizens, old people, would you like your home painted? Oh, well, we can't afford it. And I go, yes, you can. You buy the paint, grab me a couple paint brushes, and I'll be here every day, and I'll paint it for you for $5 an hour, but you got to pay me cash. And that's the way I would get some money. I'd work, you know, for 8 hours scraping and painting their house and do a really good job. And at the end of the day, I had $40, and I go, wow, to me, that's a lot of money. I can go to the grocery store and live like a king. I can, you know, buy a good meal, have something good to eat. But that's how I was able to get by. And I also, with legal training, I helped old people and people who couldn't afford an attorney. I would help them with their legal paperwork and whatever, but I wouldn't take money from them. I told them when they would get paid from their settlement or whatever, listen, take me grocery shopping. And I would go around the store and fill up a shopping cart full to the top, maybe overflowing, and I would say, here, you go through the thing and pay for it. So I would get a load of groceries, or I'd have somebody buy me a pair of shoes or a winter coat. And that's just, you know, a way to get by and to try to survive, because I certainly didn't get any big money for public assistance and food stamps. I had to pay the rent and then try to eat, but I didn't give up. So and that's what I encourage all veterans, and of course a lot of them are like that. Don't give up. But as so, I say, we're doing better now, and the big thing that helped is actually someone like you. We have the Internet, where before we couldn't do anything with the major news medias or newspapers. Now we have the Internet where we can try to get this out, and that's why I created that website so people could actually see the documents, that they could see that this isn't some joke or whatever, and I don't care if they like me. You know, you don't kill the messenger. I'm just the messenger, and I brought you everything, and it's there at that website to look at and for people to get an education, and it seems to be working. We've had over 15,000 people come to the website and since Veterans Day, so November to December, January, February, in about 3 months, we've had 15,000 people.
Wow.
And so that's very good for a brand new website, and we're just ecstatic that we're getting a lot of people, and I'm getting phone calls from veterans. They'll send me an email through the website and then want to talk with me, and they want to try to help. And that's appreciated.
Right, right. So once they get that the spin code, are you saying that it's almost impossible to get rid of a negative spin code?
Yes, that's correct. You're just a dead person. In fact, when I go places and I tell veterans, well, now, oh, you're full of it. You know what you're talking about. And I say, well, give me your DD-214. And when they give it to me, I say, look, there it is, right there. There's your secret number. And I go, I know what it means, because some of these, I guess maybe a dozen numbers were given out more than other numbers, and I sort of have them memorized, and I would say, there's your number right there. And I'd look right at them and go, bang, you're dead. And they go, what do you mean? And I go, exactly what I said. Here's your secret number. Everybody knows about it, and you want to know what it says? Yours says unsuitability, drug abuse, marijuana or heroin, or any hallucinogenic drug or misuse of a prescription drug. That's what it says. Oh, there's nothing to my records to say I did drugs or anything. And I said, don't you understand? Who cares? All they want to see is that number. You're a druggie. And if the policeman pulls you over on the side of a road because you have a taillight out and they take your driver's license number and punch it into their computer in the police car, they can bring up your military records, and they can see your code number, and the next thing you know, the officer's standing next to your car. Sir, would you step out of your car? We're having a policeman bring the dog over here, the drug-sniffing dog. We're going to let it go in your car, see if we find any drugs. So that's how it's being used against veterans for whatever. And but you have to remember, this is supposed to be America, where I pledge allegiance to the flag with liberty and justice for all. But when you end up being branded with one of these code numbers, it's there forever.
Okay,
I'm just not going to get rid of it.
I need
the one. Pardon me?
Okay, I need to do a station ID here.
Oh, okay.
Okay, this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida Community Radio. And, again, the temperature right now is about 31, and this is Truth Quest Radio with Melody. And I was going to go, the opinions expressed by the host and guests on this show do not necessarily represent the views of KHEN, its staff, or board of directors. And this evening I've got Edwin Crosby III, who has taken up the cause of the DD-214 numbers with spin codes and how that affects the veterans and whether they're able to receive benefits and how some of them may be discouraged from getting their benefits because of other people getting a straw man getting their benefits. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So go ahead. Sorry.
I would like. I'm at my website right now.
Okay.
And I want to click on something here. Under the menu, it says spin codes, and these are a list of these secret numbers that people can look at and different things.
So they'd be able to find that spin code that would be listed on their papers for with their DD.
Yes.
Okay.
If they knew where to look. Now, before 1975, a veteran should automatically have one of these secret code numbers right on their discharge paper. Now, the World War II veterans didn't have any. Neither did the Korean veterans. As you recall, in the beginning, I told you that it was June of 1956 that they started to do this. Now, underneath of the spin code thing on the menu, when you click on it, it opens up and it says alphabetical codes and numeric codes. But I also would like to point out to your folks here, on February 4th, 2008, we received an email from the headquarters of Department Army to take down Army Regulation 635-5-1 that we had posted up on the website, which was these code numbers. So the Army said, oh, you can't have that up there. You got to take that down. So we did. I didn't want to argue with them, but we also put down here, you can Google AR-635-5-1 and find over 1,700 references to this document. And then below it, it says, on that note, the Army has posted this regulation at the link provided by the Army on their recruiter tools page that was found during the Google search. So the code numbers, which are supposed to be for official use only, which means they have a security classification, but in reality they don't. These code numbers aren't supposed to be available to banks, corporations, and the public and private sector, but they certainly are. It's just easy to find. And they're just right here for everybody to see. Now, I clicked on numeric codes, and I wanted to go down this page here and read a couple of these things so the listeners can get an idea. Like number 242 says resignation of enlisted personnel on unspecified enlistment for good of the service. Well, you know, that might sound a little funny. But then down here, number 248, it just says unsuitability. And then 250, 251, 252, 253, 255, 55 again, and 56 all say homosexual.
Well, I see one here that says 385 for pathological liar.
Yeah, and then the one 263 for bedwetter. And some of these are just kind of outrageous that you can say this, but you have to remember, we're talking 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds, and there's one old-timer, an old World War One veteran, said at Wilmington, Delaware, at this veterans meeting I was at in 1983, where John McCain, Mr. So-called Senator McCain, showed up, that that you don't punish young people for the remainder of their life for small potato stuff. And so your listeners would get a kind of a kick out of this. They told me when the judge, and I have the original court transcript, the judge said, well, what code number should Mr. Crosby have had? And they said, well, he should have had SDN-46A. And the judge said, I don't care about that. What does it mean? And the judge and they said, a judge, it says unsuitability, apathy. And the judge goes, Judge Ford, he was the oldest federal judge in the country. He goes, what? This man volunteered to go to Vietnam. He's a highly decorated combat veteran. His record is impeccable. He was on his way back to Vietnam for a third tour, and he's apathetic. And, of course, the government attorney and the Fulbright colonel from the Air Force that was sitting over there, they didn't say anything. They just sort of slid down in their seats. And so it kind of shows you, but that first word is the key word. And when you folks were at my website under – I have to back up here because I want to make sure. Under plaintiff's exhibits, if you click on that, and it says plaintiff's exhibit 2, and I'm clicking on it now, that's the original document, and there it is, June 11th, 1956, and down at the bottom it, you can see there's the court seal, and it says that the following reasons will not be stated in words in item 11C. Now, you asked me this a while ago, and I wanted to lead up to it. On this document called the DD-214, each block of that document is numbered. And that, for instance, we're talking here, it says that this reason will not be stated in words in item 11C. And 11C is reason and authority. And it says that these are the things that they put up, these categories: unsuitability, inaptitude, unfitness, misconduct, homosexual, or any other reason involving mental or moral issues upon which the discharge of the individual may be predicated. So these were the categories, and I like to tell people in a big room, there's blackboards all the way around the room, and on one blackboard they write unsuitability, the other one inaptitude, unfitness, and etc. And then under each one of those, they ended up making unsuitability, bedwetter, unsuitability, unsanitary habits. What's that? Picking your nose? This is what we ended up with, was this kind of a thing. And guy who signed this was Carter L. Burgess, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower, Personnel, and Reserve. A few months after he signed this, he left and became president and owner of TWA Airlines.
I see.
So President Eisenhower warned about this military-industrial complex, it would seem that back then this particular generation of people were up to the very bad and just no good. And I look at this kind of from, I don't want to use that term, the big picture, but why would this generation that did this, which we're talking these World War II veterans and that generation, why would they stab their own sons and their grandchildren in the back and sell everybody down the drain? That's a big question. And I don't and can never even imagine what the answer would be. And if somebody said to me, oh, well, we were battling the communists, well, amen and hallelujah, what are you doing stabbing us all in the back for? We're veterans. We serve the country, and we're Americans, and we come in all skin colors and both sexes and all religions. Why are you doing this to us? But these people just don't care. And they believe themselves to be above the law, and of course, with a corrupt justice system, that's what happens.
Why don't you get into a little bit of what you how you trained yourself so that you could carry this forward and take on this issue?
I was raised old school, and I started working with a Social Security card at age 13, washing dishes and stuff in a convalescent home. And setting the tables and whatever. There was the chef and myself during the summer. And I worked from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 at night, 7 days a week, no days off, and earned money to buy my own school clothes from the time I was 13. So I was a pretty good position all my life to be to learn about life. At age 16, I started working in a drugstore and waited on customers because of personality and math skills or whatever. I was always very good with math, could add everything up my head, but I used the cash register and counted people's change out for them. And nowadays, if you notice, you go to a store, the people working the cash register can't even do the math. They have to look at it and say, oh, your change is $2.03. And they just hand it to you. They don't want to count it out, which I used to do to people and whatever. But I learned that if you want something done right, do it yourself. So when all this stuff started to come about, and from my military training and whatever, I just knew that if I wanted this done right or I wanted to really find out what was going on, that I would have to do this myself. And that's how I proceeded, even though I had an attorney, and he, John and I are very good friends to this day, and my original attorney there, Mr. John Castor, he had a stroke and can no longer practice law. Matter of fact, he's Social Security disability, but we still talk and exchange Christmas cards and salutations and things like that. He's not too far from me, but... I just started to, by working at that legal services, I thought to myself, well, this is all new to me, this stuff called the law and legal research and looking in books and digging up all this stuff, and I'm going to have to learn how to do it. So I did by taking some college courses and by working at the legal services and by listening to people, mentors and different things, and just learning on my own, sort of on-the-job training, and I've been at this for 30 years, so I'm pretty good. And I don't ever tell anybody I'm a lawyer or anything like that. That's against the law. Wouldn't do that. But I have the same skills as nearly any attorney would. In fact, in certain areas of the law, I'm a considered expert. So... I've had people contact me to get information regarding computers, Big Brother and computers, and different things, because I've dug up all this stuff out of Washington long before anybody else ever saw it. I have different reports that people have never seen and whatever, and plaintiff's exhibit number one is the report of the Privacy Protection Study Commission. And I actually went down to Washington and went to their offices and said, listen, I've been sending you letters and phoning you. Why aren't you talking about these code numbers and whatever? So After sitting down and conversing with them for about 3 hours, page 247, 248, and 249 in that book are devoted to military codes. And you can go to my website and look at Plaintiff's Exhibit 1 and read what they put in there. But it's kind of interesting when you look at that, because the Privacy Protection Study Commission recommended that every veteran get a new DD-214. That meant 26 million. And of course, in that Plaintiff's Exhibit 19A, which is up there, that one very important letter, the government's position is, oh, that'd cost us a lot of money. Well, not necessarily. What it would cost you would probably be standing in front of a firing squad. That these folks who think that this would cost them a lot of money to tell their soldiers, oh, gee whiz, we stabbed you in the back. We ruined your life, tore you apart from your family and different things and your children. Gee whiz, we're kind of sorry. And that's not going to work. At this point, we want our pound of flesh, and it just isn't going to go away. The old saying is, how does it go? Is about fool me once and I'm a fool. No, fool me once and I'm human. Fool me twice and I'm a fool. Well, you might have fooled me once, and I'm human. You stuck that secret number on me and stabbed me in the back, but you're not going to fool me again. Those who did this and those who carry it out are responsible. They're no different than the Nazi that stood at the train car when they arrived at a concentration camp and said, you folks go over there and get a shower. You folks go over there and you're going to be slave labor. What's the difference?
It's kind of like
that's what these people in Washington have decided to us. You go take a shower, we'll get rid of you, and you're going to be slave labor. You'll never be able to run for public office or hold a good job. You'll never have nothing.
So it's kind of like a hidden caste system.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And when you work with the law, one of the things is they're always looking in law books, no matter if it's 50 years ago or 100 or 200 years ago, to see what some other judge said 50 years ago regarding a matter. But that's where we're having a problem in America, is the laws have not caught up to these computers. And the information that can be slung around, especially false and stigmatizing information that can be slung around America. Now, if the folks go to my website and look under the menu down in the blue area, it says threats. Today, I received a threatening email from someone saying that they've been paid money to kill me and that they're going to come and kill me, but I can save my life and whatever if I pay them $15,000 and they'll provide me with a tape of the conversation of the person who hired them to kill me, et cetera, and don't call the police, and we'll know if you did. You are being watched, and, of course, and my family, too. And the first thing I did was call the police and tell them to come in here and printed out the email and handed it to them and said, I don't tolerate this. And of course, we don't know who did it, but they have means, and so does the FBI, to track down these person that sent this email and find them. But if it's just something somebody sent to a whole bunch of people, especially to scare some senior citizen and just paying this kind of money, that's absurd. Whoever who sent that deserves to be in a jail cell. But I just thought I never let anybody threaten me, and we wanted to post that up and show that that when you stand up and try to tell the truth, that you're going to run into a little problem here and there, but just don't let it bother you. Just keep right on going forward, because this is America. This is not supposed to be some Nazi concentration camp or the thousand-year Reich is what it looks like now. Hopefully, and there's so many people, I see it on the Internet and talking to people, they just feel that, say, that rubber band is wound up so tight it's getting ready to snap.
Well,
and the veterans can see it. I know they, I've talked to many of them, they can see it too, that something's coming. And I hope the American people will support veterans because we love this country more than you do. We actually stood on the battlefield and were willing to sacrifice parts of our body and lives in order that you may have this nice free society that isn't so free anymore. If we could just get that justice system straightened out and get these lawyers out from behind the bench where they don't belong and put lay people back there dressed in a red robe, then I think that we're going to be okay. That's the most important thing. As a matter of fact, if folks watch that 90-minute DVD, which is on my website, what we want to do and what I'm trying to do now is we want to sue this so-called American Bar Association, which to me is also known as that old thing the cops use, a.k.a. The Gestapo Bar Association. And I have no qualms at this point, based on all this evidence and all the history books and whatever, of saying that this Bar Association is, in fact, the Gestapo. And these lawyers sitting behind a bench in these black robes, these aren't American judges, because an American judge wears a red robe. And, of course, we were sort of raised in my religious beliefs or whatever to have the wisdom of Solomon, where Solomon took the baby and said, let's cut it in half. And the lady goes, oh, no, don't kill the baby. Give it to the other one. And then Solomon gave it to the one that was willing to save the baby's life. It's something a lot of people, you know, they just don't fathom what justice is.
Last week we had Denise Nichols on. I don't know if you know her or not. Who
name rings a bell.
Yeah, she's a nurse that lives in Denver that's been fighting for benefits for the Gulf War I vets. And it appears like whether you're sick or not sick, it's kind of like an uphill climb for these veterans when they get out of the service.
It's very difficult sometimes, especially if you're a combat veteran, to come home and get out of the military and adjust to society, because you got to remember, it's not Hollywood. When you're in war, it's a totally different thing. Your senses are very heightened, and those who think and use their common sense, which is the basis for intelligence, are the ones that will survive, and sometimes just sheer luck can get you home in one piece. And it's just a little bit hard to adjust, but when you come home and you are a veteran, you're told, well, you have a 10-point preference. We're going to try to move you to the head of the list for a government job to help you out and get you fellows started in the employment sector. And, of course, it never worked because these coded numbers were preventing it. And now these new fellas are coming home. Maybe you saw that newspaper article that they discharged more than 30,000 guys from the military for a personality disorder that they claim they had before they ever went in the military. Well, if that's true, why did you take them? And the law says if you spend more than 90 days in the military, you're entitled to veterans benefits. Well, now that these fellas have been branded as having a coded number that would say unsuitability personality disorder, now you have employers looking and saying, oh, I'm not going to hire this guy. He'll come in here with a gun and kill us all.
And there's one here that says inadequate personality.
No, there's some of them really stupid, aren't they? I mean, they don't make any sense. The one that, you know, we kind of chuckled, the one that said unsanitary habits. And the one attorney there that day said, well, what does that mean? If I'm picking my nose and some officer saw me, that they go, oh, look at that. Let's give him that secret number. We'll ruin his life for the rest of his life because he was over there picking his nose. Or suppose you were scratching your butt. You know, you've been sitting too long and got a little numb, and somebody saw you doing that. I mean, it's very subjective. And the United States Supreme Court decided in Wisconsin versus Constantia that a citizen has a vested right in their good family name. So you can't character assassinate somebody's good family name. You may now turn to the courts and seek protection when somebody tries to character assassinate your good family name. So there's... where there's a will, sometimes there's a way. And if there's anything I learned through the years, especially from my mentor there, Judge Falco, out of Syracuse, was he said, Edwin, as time goes along, people leave their job. They retire. New people come in, and they don't know what's going on. And there's documents over there in the filing cabinet carrying out something that they don't even know about. And I've been able to get documents that they wouldn't give me in the past because 15 years went by and somebody new was there and they just said, well, this man's asking under the Freedom of Information Act for them documents, give them to him. So they turn around and give me this stuff that they really kind of maybe shouldn't be given because of they don't know I have the rest of it. But every time I get something, we get a new piece of the puzzle. And in that... as I was telling you about that Vista computer system and this new software program about this thing called business notes, that we're able to just learn about this kind of stuff and post it up on my website underneath the menu. It says VA caught red-handed. And there's the name of those two lawyers in Washington, D.C. at the Board of Veterans Appeals that were arrested for destroying medical evidence in veterans' claims file folders so they couldn't get paid. Now, everybody out there who's been listening to this wants you to think about this. The one lawyer said, Lawrence Gottfried, said he destroyed more than 100,000. And the female, Jill Rigolowski, said she didn't know how many, but it was thousands. But if you took that one figure, 100,000, and multiplied it times $2,000 a month, that's $200 million a month. So $200 million is a low ball figure, $500 million is a high ball figure. That's how much money's being ripped out of the VA per month. Now, where's it gone? Now, the old saying is, follow the money. And hopefully, when people look at my website here, I've already had a couple people who called me up and got in contact with me that, through their own investigation, stumbled into this stuff and stumbled into other things that were related to the theft of this money. So there are people out there trying, and there's still some honest people left that work, call themselves public servants, that will tell a veteran or tell somebody, well, you know, somebody else is getting your paycheck. And it isn't difficult to try to dig this evidence up, but it just requires that somebody needs to be vigilant and find out about this stuff. Ask questions. And sometimes you just don't get that, and which certainly wish a lot of people would spend a little time, some of these veterans, but a lot of them are just busy with their daily lives of going to work or doing whatever, and it just, it's hard to understand sometimes why something wasn't done about this.
Well, how long is it? What is the length of time that it usually takes for a veteran to even get benefits?
I would, of course, everybody's going to be denied the first time around. They figure that if you fill all the paperwork out and send the evidence in or try to do something, that they can deny your claim, and then that only maybe 3 out of 10 are going to come back and fight them to get the money. Because a lot of people just give up anymore. A lot of people don't have what it takes to go the extra distance or or to say, hey, wait a minute, I am entitled to that benefit. I'm not going to let them get away with that and fight them. So that's why you have very few veterans getting paid, but there are many veterans that were like myself that have claims 10, 20 years and older, and we've given them all the proof and what they need, but they still wouldn't pay because they've been stealing the money. And I asked, submitted a Freedom of Information request to the Veterans Administration 2 years ago, and I sent them this request that said, here is my VA claim number. I want to see all computer printouts, microfiche, or paperwork that have to do with any monies paid to that VA claim number. And I've been waiting 2 years, and of course I don't have the money to hire a lawyer to go into federal court and force them to give me that information. But I sent the request in and asked for it, and I'm willing to bet you a dollar that if it came back, it would show that I've been being paid monies since the 1970s, but I never saw a penny.
I was on a conference call with Doug Lamborn, our senator, and there was a girl in the military that was saying that even for them to get benefits now, for some of them, they were already being told that they had like PTSD before they even went in the service, and they were getting denied.
Right, and we had one here at the Buffalo, New York VA hospital. This veteran lost his leg, and they shipped him from Iraq to Germany, where they took good care of him, and then sent him over to Walter Reed Hospital, blah, blah, etc. And he opens a claim with the VA to collect, because he's a one-legged person, and the VA denied his claim and said, there's no proof you lost your leg over or were wounded.
But they took him in the service without a leg. Huh?
Yeah. And you know what? See, it's hard to understand, I guess, for, say, regular people, but you're going to stand there and look a combat veteran in the eye and tell them, hey, look, you don't have any proof you've lost your leg over in Iraq or something. You didn't get wounded over there. At that point, all that veteran wants to do is just club that person senseless. And I understand them. There's a very good movie I tell people to look at. It's called Article 99. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you ever seen it?
No, I've never heard of it, actually.
Oh, you want to go to a video store and ask them to get it, or they probably have it there for you. Kiefer Sutherland, Ray Liotta, one of the old actors, Eli Wallach, is in it, and it's about a VA hospital, and it's based on a true story. And in the beginning of it, a veteran is standing at the desk, and she said, but sir, you have both your legs, you don't have a disability, and he stepped back and he's wiggling around and he pulls up his artificial leg and slams it on their desk and he says, now what did you say? And then a big fight breaks out. So it's understandable when you tell someone who was in combat and they submit a claim and they believe they have everything correct that you're a liar, you were never there. But it all has to do with this theft of monies from the Veterans Administration and from this nation's veterans, and the reason why there's so many homeless veterans, so many unemployed, underemployed veterans, and why so many aren't getting treatment that they really desperately need. And there's another website, your viewers, if they were to click on my links page, at my website, it says there's four little things: media coverage, legal, veterans, and medical. If you clicked on veterans, it'll open up another page, and it's this one called VA Watchdog. And this man posts a lot of stuff up here on a daily basis, and there's just horror stories there about, I think one of them the other day was that the VA killed a veteran, botched a surgery and different things and a few other things. And then they caught that one in Indiana or Illinois who killed five veterans, and he was had his license taken away from him in Massachusetts. He shouldn't even have been there. And this just isn't right that all these fellas that brave men and women that go serve this country go to get medical treatment and ended up dying from it or not getting any. But then they always seem to find that one person. And I always wonder, where do they dig them up that the news cameras and the TV people are right there? Sir, do you think the VA hospital treats you right? Oh, yeah, they've been real good to me. Well, where are these thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of veterans that aren't getting treatment and everything? Why aren't they being asked? Where's the other side of the coin? There's always two opinions of something. They can certainly have a veteran there that says, oh, I think they're doing a great job, but where's that veteran like myself that says, well, they nearly killed me twice. I'm suing them. I'm sorry to tell the American taxpayers that you're going to have to reach in their pocket more. As a matter of fact, if some of your guests want to go look up and find out, for the past 4 or 5 years, the VA's being sued $700 million per year in medical malpractice and negligence lawsuits. And that's absurd. That money should be used for medical treatment instead of paying out monies in lawsuits.
Yeah, but what is the percentage that they're actually paying out in those claims?
Well, say, for instance, and you're correct in that if they, if a veteran says, I want $1 million, well, they have to do that, but the veteran might have ended up settling for $350,000 because it dragged on for 6 or 7 years. By the time they got in court and finally got it heard, that the veterans lost everything. I had a veteran today in Pennsylvania call me. He's getting very frustrated and almost feels like he's at the end of his road, that he keeps fighting with them to get, I think they're taking $417 a month from his paycheck for no reason at all. And he finally did get a lawyer to help. And everything by the law is in his favor, but the VA just acts like they're a bunch of morons and they can't get it straight.
Yeah, but if they're anything like the Social Security system, if they do get a lawyer, if they and get any kind of settlement or payment from it, don't they get like 30% of it?
Yeah, you can make a deal with a lawyer, though. In fact, I did. Today, along with my webmaster, we underneath of my menu here, we put up today, it says filing a lawsuit. And we thought in discussing, because my webmaster is also a Vietnam veteran out of Indiana, and he's very computer savvy, and this is what he does, is build websites for people and build computers and different things, and he's very knowledgeable in this area. We thought that because I get emails from veterans, what do I do about this? How do I go about filing a lawsuit? And, of course, the first thing to do is to find an attorney that will help you, and that's the big problem. None of them want to help a veteran at all, but and then they want to stand up lawyers and tell everybody the laws are equal for all. There is equal justice under the law, and that's – they just come up with these stupid things. There's a lawyer for everybody. Well, in essence, there sort of isn't. But I told in this thing under filing a lawsuit that the veterans, all they need to do is make copies of my plaintiff's exhibits and the legal briefs and take them to a lawyer and say, look, all you need to do is erase this guy's name and insert my name and put down some history about when I went into service and when I got out and I was given that secret number and didn't know about it. But here it is. It's all right here for you. You don't have to do very much. And let's sue them for $5 million, and I'll gladly give you 20%. So the lawyer would get a couple $100,000 out of it, which is more than they deserve because they really didn't have to do much. And I think... when folks look at that DVD video and they see what we're trying to do is to sue this bar association for $120 billion. And the reason is we want to put them out of business and make sure that we can put that money in a trust fund and pay these veterans who've been stabbed in the back with one of these code numbers some money. their widows, and even their orphans, because there's been an awful lot of them that were never paid. I believe one widow in the 1990s sued him in court and said, my husband's claim sat there for 15 years and he died. You owe me that money. And he should have been raided before them, and a federal judge agreed and ordered her to be paid 15 years back money, and then also to be paid her widow's benefits. So now they had to go, and a lot of things started to get changed where a veteran was waiting years to get paid and died. Now the widow would be entitled to the money, but a lot of widows don't know that they can go back and even ask for that money.
So I wonder what the percentage of vets that really do take them to task on these non-payment or dragging their feet.
Well, believe it or not, there's quite a few. I've got a case here I pulled off of the Cornell University's Law Library the other day that was done, and the decision came down September 26, 2007. And the case is a Montserrat Andino, A-N-D-I-N-O, versus James Nicholson, the Secretary of the Veterans Affairs. And what this case was all about was in 1971, he was awarded benefits. Then in 1973, they took him away, and they had no legal right to do it, and the court agreed. And so this man was ordered to be paid all the way back to 1971, the money that they owed him, perhaps $600,000. And the VA, it says right on the last page of the decision, the judge was Lawrence Hegel. It says vacated and remanded. And it was supposed to be sent back so they could figure out how much money they owed the guy and pay him. The Board of Veterans Appeals turned around, sent him a letter, and said, claim denied. Now, he won his case, and the judge ordered him to do that, and then they turn around and send it to him and tell him claim denied. Well, at that point, you're literally pulling your hair out, because it seems that even when a judge orders them to do something, they still don't want to pay. So, and I'm holding that decision in front of me right now. This is from the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit out of Washington, D.C., so there are cases, and I pull them off the Internet here and there, or somebody tells me about them, where there are veterans who are trying to get paid. And matter of fact, you raised the point. There was something that came through the other day about the VA. When a veteran wins a claim for more than $200,000, I think it is, that the regional office then sends his case to Washington, D.C., and somebody there looks at it and says, ah, we're denying this one. So it comes back to the veteran, claim denied. You're not going to get paid all that money we owe you. Even when you win, now they set up another office to deny you the back pay that you're owed when the law says you will be paid. So at that point, where does somebody file a criminal charge and these people are cited for obstructing governmental administration and obstructing justice? And that's the whole problem, is that these VA employees seem to be given immunity that they can't be prosecuted for criminal charges. Now, when I was in Montana in 2001 and 2 and part of 2003, I believe, before I went over to Oregon to get additional surgery, I opened this lawsuit again in September 2001. And what they did is the U.S. attorney there called the VA at Fort Harrison, Montana regional office and told them to take a 536-page legal transcript submitted to any federal court clerk and destroy it. That was my evidence. And they destroyed it. And when I called the court in Washington and asked them for a copy of it, they said, we routinely destroy that stuff within 6 months. But, Mr. Crosby, that record will always stay in your VA file. So if you find clear and unmistakable error or some other reason or have new evidence, new and material evidence, that you may open that claim again. And so here this transcript was destroyed because that was my proof in federal court that the government failed to obey two federal court orders and perpetrated a fraud upon the court. And then, of course, that criminal act of destroying a legal transcript submitted to any federal court clerk, that's a five-year prison sentence. So what did I do? I'm a good citizen. I filed criminal charges and sent them to the foreman of the federal grand jury in Billings, Montana, and the U.S. attorney intercepted it, even though it was addressed to the foreman. And I even said in the letter to the foreman, please respond to me, as I'm sure that the U.S. attorney may intercept this. And, of course, they did. So in order to protect themselves, this justice system, which is so corrupt, that's how veterans can't get by that particular venue and get any monies that they're owed. And it's really sad. And another thing they did while I had that lawsuit in federal court, one day I receive in the mail, Dear Mr. Crosby, your claim for frostbite is being considered. We can't process your claim any further until you send us evidence of frostbite. Well, duh, how do you get frostbite in a jungle? I mean, we're talking 100 degrees during the day and maybe 70 or 80 during the night, 365 days a year. How do you get frostbite? And I never opened a claim for frostbite, but it took me like 8 or 9 months of arguing with them and a complaint to the VA Inspector General in order to get that removed. And in the VA Inspector General's report, it says the claim for frostbite that was supposedly submitted by Mr. Crosby was removed from the file and destroyed, as he did not open such a claim. So any way they can to delay you for a year or 2 years and or more just to hope you die, this is the kind of tricks they employ. And what is just needed, if more veterans would file criminal complaints and keep a record of it, make copies of the documents they sent and send them in certified mail, that sooner or later, if we can get enough of these veterans together in one spot or gather this data, and one particular individual has done so at a website called Vets for Justice, Billy Kidwell, he's out of Florida. Over the years, he's had, I think, 4 million veterans visit his website is the latest count. I know it's well over 4 million, that they've emailed him with complaints and things that they've done, so he has a very good record of it. He's getting ready to sue the Veterans Administration under the RICO statute as an organized crime outfit based on the law.
That kind of makes sense. Now, what was the spell out your website, by the way, again, so that...
Okay, thank you. It would be www.veterancourt. C-O-U-R-T, codes, codes.com. And you don't want to skip any spaces between veteran court codes. And the reason we chose these three words is they are keywords. Veteran is a keyword. Court is a keyword. Codes is a keyword. That we thought that this would be better. And up at the top of the page, you see there's an American flag, but it's a Bennington flag. This is the original 13 stars with a 76 in the middle, and that implies that this what we need to do is get back to basics. And if we were to get back to basics, so many people aren't reading that Constitution, and if we could just fix this the judicial branch and get it the way it should be, it would be okay. One fella told me, I didn't know about it, but you can research it on the internet. It's there. In the 1890s in San Francisco, California, they took all the judges and hanged them. Instead, they were so corrupt, we need to start over. And I go, wow, that's pretty amazing. That's a little more than 100 years ago. They took them all and hanged them. I go, well, you know, maybe we need to see history repeat itself here. But the arrogance of this bar association and lawyers to think that they're the only game in town and that they're the only people who can merit out justice. That's why those people got on that boat and came over to and landed at Plymouth Rock in 1620, was they were fleeing persecution from lawyers who wore powdered wigs to fool people into believing that they were old and wise. And that's why they got out of there. When the framers of the Constitution drew up that document, they were trying to fix all the ills that the human race has encountered. And they, when they got to that part, and there were a couple lawyers even present, they said, okay, let's write this in here. And they said, well, we can't put lawyers in here. We got to leave that word out, that the day will come when the American people are smart enough to figure out that we can't let lawyers behind the bench. In a democracy, lawyers have a place, and that is to say in front of the bench, defending, representing, or advising their client on the law, but they have no business sitting behind the bench. And there are so many places on the internet now of corrupt judges being arrested, and they've been doing these things, and it's amazing. In Illinois, they were actually kidnapping children from their parents and forcing them into other states to be in foster homes so people could make a bunch of money off of it. It was absurd.
There's a Sherman Skolnick that I would follow that has written a lot of articles, and he used to talk about how he'd put like 26 judges behind bars there in Illinois.
Yeah, no, I recognize that name. I believe we've even talked on the phone. But there's also a lady out that way. She might be in Indiana, that she's been big into this because and she's has a PhD and a very intelligent individual. They took her kids away from her for no reason at all other than that's just the way it is. And she's been fighting them for years.
Yeah, I think I've heard about that case.
Yeah, so there's just, it's a pity. I mean, we can stand here and gather all the evidence and prove that what we say, our criminal charges and our complaints involving civil suits, but it doesn't do any good if you have crooked judges. And that's the problem. And so I believe that that's the one thing we need to work on. And I think by suing this Bar Association as a hate group and terrorist organization, that we can do it, because there's this guy, Morris Dees, out of Alabama, the Southern Poverty Law Project, who makes a living going around the country suing hate groups. And I actually personally met him at Hamilton College in New York some years ago when he was a guest speaker. And afterwards, I went up and showed him some of these documents. And then I looked him square in the eye and I said, does this mean that I can sue the Bar Association as a hate group? And his eyeballs came right out of his head. And you could see the wheels turning like, oh, my God, they can use this stuff to sue. So I've got all the paperwork on how to do it, but I need some funding to do it. And, I mean, I can draw it all up. That doesn't cost money, but the court fees do now. And now you can't even file in federal court unless you have a credit card. And,
really?
And, it's all done electronically, which is absurd. You should always be allowed to walk into the court clerk and lay copies down on the counter and let them stamp them, and then they get sent to the proper parties. You should be allowed to do that, and I think it's just another way to
keep people like you out of there.
Down. Yeah. They erased it. We lost that material, and that's not right.
So, in closing, you know, they really ran. I mean, you have to be one of a kind for sticking with it for 30 years, trying to go after the injustices that takes place with the veterans. And is it any closing words here?
Well, yes, I've stayed with this a long time because I'm one of the victims, and I look at those people who were victims of Holocaust I, and some of those people that hunted down all these Nazis that were hiding in different countries around the world, and and were war criminals, that they never gave up hunting them down to see that they got punished for what they did. Well, I'm in the same boat. I'm trying to see that the people who have done this are arrested and punished, and the people who have been stealing these billions out of the VA, that they too are arrested and punished, and everything they own seized and sold at auction. So they're left with nothing. And I mean every member of their family, because they were all benefiting from it. So where there's a will, there's a way. And you just can't really give up and quit, especially for something as important as this. This is everything our country stands for, liberty and justice for all, and what a lot of people shoot their mouth off about. But when it comes time to stand up and be heard, they're not around.
Well,
and I believe Thomas Paine described that as being, what did he say, neither sunshine patriot nor summer soldier will stand when it needs be, but the winter soldier, like those who stood at Valley Forge through that terrible winter way back when, they stood and stayed. And that's what I am, sort of a winter soldier, that I'm not going away.
Well, I sure hope that you and the veterans can, you know, see some fruits of your labors here, for particularly, you know, for all the hard work and time that you've put in. And Edwin, I really want to thank you for coming on and letting the public know what's going on with the VA and these numbers, codes, and the benefits that should be rightfully coming to the veterans. So
one more thing before
okay. We go. Okay.
We took an oath to uphold, defend, and protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and or domestic. And it doesn't end when you take the uniform off and the American people trust us to be honorable and to do our duty. And that's all I'm trying to do, is my duty to the American people. And that's all I can do.
Well, again, Edwin, I thank you for coming on the program, and I hope that you'll come back on again soon.
Thank you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, thank you. Goodbye.